Now new tidings came to Doriath concerning Nargothrond, for some that had escaped from the defeat and the sack, and had survived the fell winter in the wild, came at last to Thingol seeking refuge. And the march wardens brought them to the king. And some said that all the enemy had withdrawn northwards, and others that Glaurung abode still in the halls of Felagund. And some said that the Mormigil was slain, and others that he was cast under a spell by the dragon, and dwelt there yet as one changed to stone. But all declared that it was known to many in Nargothrond ere the end that the Mormigil was none other than Turin, son of Húrin, of Dor Lómin. Then Morwen was distraught, and refusing the counsel of Melian, she rode forth alone into the wild to seek her son, or some true tidings of him. Thingol therefore sent Mablung after her, with many hardy march wards, to find her and guard her, and to learn what news they might. But Nienor was bidden to remain behind. Yet the fearlessness of her house was hers, and in an evil hour, in hope that Morwen would return when she saw that her daughter would go with her into peril, Nienor disguised herself as one of Thingol's people, and went with that ill-fated riding. They came upon Morwen by the banks of Sirion, and Mablung besought her to return to Menegroth. But she was fey, and would not be persuaded. Then also the coming of Nienor was revealed, and despite Morwen's command she would not go back, and Mablung perforce brought them to the hidden ferries at the meres of twilight, and they passed over Sirion. And after 3 days' journeying, they came to Amon Ethir, the Hill of Spies, that long ago Felagund had caused to be raised with great labour, a league before the doors of Nargothrond. There Mablung set a guard of riders about Morwen and her daughter, and forbade them to go further. But he, seeing from the hill no sign of any enemy, went down with his scouts to the Narog, as stealthily as they could go. But Glaurung was aware of all that they did, and he came forth in heat of wrath, and lay into the river, and a vast vapour and a foul reek went up, in which Mablung and his company were blinded and lost. Then Glaurung passed east over Narog. Seeing the onset of the dragon, the guards upon Amon Ethir sought to lead Morwen and Nienor away, and fly with them with all speed back eastwards. But the wind bore the blank mists upon them, and their horses were maddened by the dragon stench, and were ungovernable, and ran this way and that, so that some were dashed against trees and were slain, and others were borne far away. Thus the ladies were lost, and of Morwen indeed no sure tidings came ever to Doriath after. But Nienor, being thrown by her steed yet unhurt, made her way back to Amon Ethir, there to await Mablung, and came thus above the reek into the sunlight. And looking westward, she stared straight into the eyes of Glaurung, whose head lay upon the hilltop. Her will strove with him for a while, but he put forth his power. And having learned who she was, he constrained her to gaze into his eyes, and he laid a spell of utter darkness and forgetfulness upon her, so that she could remember nothing that had ever befallen her, nor her own name, nor the name of any other thing. And for many days she could neither hear nor see nor stir by her own will. Then Glaurung left her standing alone upon Amon Ethir and went back to Nargothrond. Now Mablung, who greatly daring had explored the halls of Felagund when Glaurung left them, fled from them at the approach of the dragon and returned to Amon Ethir. The sun sank and night fell as he climbed the hill, and he found none there save Nienor, standing alone under the stars as an image of stone. No word she spoke or heard, but would follow if he took up her hand. Therefore, in great grief, he led her away, though it seemed to him vain, for they were both like to perish succourless in the wild. But they were found by three of Mablung's companions, and slowly they journeyed northward and eastward towards the fences of the land of Doriath beyond Sirion, and the guarded bridge nigh to the inflowing of Esgalduin. Slowly the strength of Nienor returned as they drew nearer to Doriath, but still she could not speak or hear, and walked blindly as she was led. But even as they drew near the fences, at last she closed her staring eyes and would sleep. And they laid her down and rested also unheedfully, for they were utterly outworn. There they were assailed by an orc band, such as now roamed often as nigh the fences of Doriath as they dared. But Nienor in that hour recovered hearing and sight, and being awakened by the cries of the orcs, she sprang up in terror and fled ere they could come to her. Then the orcs gave chase, and the elves after, and they overtook the orcs and slew them ere they could harm her. But Nienor escaped them, for she fled as in a madness of fear, swifter than a deer, and tore off all her clothing as she ran, until she was naked. And she passed out of their sight, running northward, and though they sought her long, they found her not, nor any trace of her. And at last Mablung, in despair, returned to Menegroth and told the tidings. Then Thingol and Melian were filled with grief. But Mablung went forth and sought long in vain for tidings of Morwen and Nienor. But Nienor ran on into the woods until she was spent, and then fell and slept and awoke. And it was a sunlit morning, and she rejoiced in light as it were a new thing, and all things else that she saw seemed new and strange, for she had no names for them. Nothing did she remember save a darkness that lay behind her and a shadow of fear. Therefore she went warily as a hunted beast, and became famished, for she had no food and knew not how to seek it. But coming at last to the crossings of Teiglin, she passed over, seeking the shelter of the great trees of Brethil, for she was afraid, and it seemed to her that the darkness was overtaking her again from which she had fled. But it was a great storm of thunder that came up from the south, and in terror she cast herself down upon the mound of Howdh en Eleth, stopping her ears from the thunder. But the rain smote her and drenched her, and she lay like a wild beast that is dying. There Turambar found her, as he came to the crossings of Teiglin, having heard rumour of orcs that roamed near, and seeing in a flare of lightning the body, as it seemed, of a slain maiden lying upon the mound of Findwillas, he was stricken to the heart. But the woodmen lifted her up, and Turambar cast his cloak about her, and they took her to a lodge nearby, and warmed her and gave her food. And as soon as she looked upon Turambar, she was comforted, for it seemed to her that she had found at last something that she had sought in her darkness, and she would not be parted from him. But when he asked her concerning her name and her kin and her misadventure, then she became troubled as a child that perceives that something is demanded but cannot understand what it may be, and she wept. Therefore Turambar said, "Do not be troubled. The tale shall wait. But I will give you a name, and I will call you Niniel, Tear Maiden." And at that name she shook her head and said, "Niniel." That was the first word she spoke after her darkness, and it remained her name among the woodmen ever after. On the next day they bore her towards Efel Brandir. But when they came to Dimrost, the rainy stair, where the tumbling stream of Celebros fell towards Teiglin, a great shuddering came upon her, wherefore afterwards that place was called Nen Girith, the Shuddering Water. Ere she came to the home of the woodmen upon Amon Obel, she was sick of a fever, and long she lay thus, tended by the women of Brethil, and they taught her language as to an infant. But ere the autumn came, by the skill of Brandir, she was healed of her sickness, and she could speak. But nothing did she remember of the time before she was found by Turambar on the mound of Howdh en Eleth. And Brandir loved her, but all her heart was given to Turambar. In that time the woodmen were not troubled by the orcs, and Turambar went not to war, and there was peace in Brethil. His heart turned to Niniel, and he asked her in marriage. But for that time she delayed in spite of her love. For Brandir foreboded he knew not what, and sought to restrain her, rather for her sake than his own, or rivalry with Turambar. And he revealed to her that Turambar was Turin, son of Húrin, and though she knew not the name, a shadow fell upon her mind. But when 3 years were passed since the sack of Nargothrond, Turambar asked Niniel again, and vowed that now he would wed her, or else go back to war in the wild. And Niniel took him with joy, and they were wedded at the midsummer, and the woodmen of Brethil made a great feast. But ere the end of the year, Glaurung sent orcs of his dominion against Brethil, and Turambar sat at home deedless, for he had promised to Niniel that he would go to battle only if their homes were assailed. But the woodmen were worsted, and Dorlas upbraided him that he would not aid the people that he had taken for his own. Then Turambar arose and brought forth again his black sword, and he gathered a great company of the men of Brethil, and they defeated the orcs utterly. But Glaurung heard tidings that the black sword was in Brethil, and he pondered what he heard, devising new evil. In the spring of the year after, Niniel conceived, and she became wan and sad. And at the same time there came to Efel Brandir the first rumours that Glaurung had issued from Nargothrond. Then Turambar sent out scouts far afield, for now he ordered things as he would, and few gave heed to Brandir. As it drew near to summer, Glaurung came to the borders of Brethil, and lay near the west shores of Teiglin. And then there was great fear among the woodfolk, for it was now plain that the great worm would assail them, and ravage their land, and not pass by, returning to Angband as they had hoped. They sought therefore the counsel of Turambar, and he counselled them that it was vain to go against Glaurung with all their force, for only by cunning and good fortune could they defeat him. He offered therefore himself to seek the dragon on the borders of the land, and bade the rest of the people to remain at Efel Brandir, but to prepare for flight. For if Glaurung had the victory, he would come first to the woodmen's homes to destroy them, and they could not hope to withstand him. But if they then scattered far and wide, then many might escape, for Glaurung would not take up his dwelling in Brethil, and would return soon to Nargothrond. Then Turambar asked for companions willing to aid him in his peril, and Dorlas stood forth, but no others. Therefore Dorlas upbraided the people and spoke scorn of Brandir, who could not play the part of the heir of the house of Haleth. And Brandir was shamed before his people and was bitter at heart. But Hunthor, kinsman of Brandir, asked his leave to go in his stead. Then Turambar said farewell to Niniel, and she was filled with fear and foreboding, and their parting was sorrowful. But Turambar set out with his two companions, and went to Nengirith. Then Niniel, being unable to endure her fear, and unwilling to wait in the Efel tidings of Turambar's fortune, set forth after him, and a great company went with her. At this, Brandir was filled all the more with dread, and he sought to dissuade her and the people that would go with her from this rashness, but they heeded him not. Therefore he renounced his lordship and all love for the people that had scorned him, and having naught left but his love for Niniel, he girt himself with a sword and went after her, but being lame, he fell far behind. Now Turambar came to Nengirith at sundown, and there he learned that Glaurung lay on the brink of the high shores of Teiglin, and was like to move when night fell. Then he called those tidings good, for the dragon lay at Cabed in Arras, where the river ran in a deep and narrow gorge that a hunted deer might overleap, and Turambar thought that he would seek no further but would attempt to pass over the gorge. Therefore, he purposed to creep down at dusk and descend into the ravine under night and cross over the wild water, and then to climb up the further cliff and so come to the dragon beneath his guard. This counsel he took, but the heart of Daedalus failed when they came to the races of Teiglin in the dark, and he dared not attempt the perilous crossing, but drew back and lurked in the woods, burdened with shame. Turambar and Hunthor, nonetheless, crossed over in safety, for the loud roaring of the water drowned all other sounds, and Glaurung slept. But ere the middle night, the dragon roused, and with a great noise and blast, cast his forward part across the chasm, and began to draw his bulk after. Turambar and Hunthor were well nigh overcome by the heat and the stench, as they sought in haste for a way up to come at Glaurung. And Hunthor was slain by a great stone that was dislodged from on high by the passage of the dragon, and smote him on the head and cast him into the river. So he ended, of the house of Haleth, not the least valiant. Then Turambar summoned all his will and courage, and climbed the cliff alone, and came beneath the dragon. Then he drew Gurthang, and with all the might of his arm and of his hate, he thrust it into the soft belly of the worm, even up to the hilts. But when Glaurung felt his death pang, he screamed, and in his dreadful throe he heaved up his bulk and hurled himself across the chasm, and there lay lashing and coiling in his agony. And he set all in a blaze about him, and beat all to ruin, until at last his fires died, and he lay still. Now Gurthang had been wrested from Turambar's hand in the throe of Glaurung, and it clave to the belly of the dragon. Turambar therefore crossed the water once more, desiring to recover his sword and to look upon his foe. And he found him stretched at his length, and rolled upon one side, and the hilts of Gurthang stood in his belly. Then Turambar seized the hilts and set his foot upon the belly, and cried in mockery of the dragon and his words at Nargothrond, "Hail, worm of Morgoth, well met again! Die now, and the darkness have thee! Thus is Turin, son of Húrin, avenged!" Then he wrenched out the sword, but a spout of black blood followed it, and fell on his hand, and the venom burned it. And thereupon Glaurung opened his eyes and looked upon Turambar with such malice that it smote him as a blow, and by that stroke and the anguish of the venom he fell into a dark swoon and lay as one dead, and his sword was beneath him. The screams of Glaurung rang in the woods and came to the people that waited at Nengirith, and when those that looked forth heard them, and saw afar the ruin and burning that the dragon made, they deemed that he had triumphed and was destroying those that assailed him. And Niniel sat and shuddered beside the falling water, and at the voice of Glaurung her darkness crept upon her again, so that she could not stir from that place of her own will. Even so Brandir found her, for he came to Nengirith at last, limping wearily. And when he heard that the dragon had crossed the river and had beaten down his foes, his heart yearned towards Niniel in pity. Yet he thought also, "Turambar is dead, but Niniel lives. Now it may be that she will come with me, and I will lead her away, and so we shall escape from the dragon together." After a while, therefore, he stood by Niniel, and he said, "Come, it is time to go. If you will, I will lead you." Then he took her hand, and she arose silently and followed him, and in the darkness none saw them go. But as they went down the path to the crossings, the moon rose and cast a grey light on the land, and Niniel said, "Is this the way?" And Brandir answered that he knew no way save to flee, as they might, from Glaurung, and escape into the wild. But Niniel said, The black sword was my beloved and my husband. To seek him only do I go. What else could you think? And she sped on before him. Thus she came towards the crossings of Taglin, and beheld Howth en Eleth in the white moonlight, and great dread came on her. Then, with a cry, she turned away, casting off her cloak, and fled southward along the river, and her white raiment shone in the moon. Thus Brandir saw her from the hillside, and turned to cross her path. But he was still behind her when she came to the ruin of Glaurung, nigh the brink of Cabed in Arras. There she saw the dragon lying, but she heeded him not, for a man lay beside him, and she ran to Turambar and called his name in vain. Then, finding that his hand was burned, she washed it with tears and bound it about with a strip of her raiment, and she kissed him and cried on him again to awake. Thereat Glaurung stirred for the last time ere he died, and he spoke with his last breath, saying,
"Hail, Nienor, daughter of Húrin. We meet again ere the end. I give thee joy that thou hast found thy brother at last. And now thou shalt know him. A stabber in the dark, treacherous to foes, faithless to friends, and a curse unto his kin, Turin, son of Húrin. But the worst of all his deeds thou shalt feel in thyself."
Then Glaurung died, and the veil of his malice was taken from her, and she remembered all the days of her life. Looking down upon Turin, she cried,
"Farewell, O twice beloved. A Turim Turamba, Turan Ambartanam. Master of doom by doom mastered, O happy to be dead."
Then Brandir, who had heard all, standing stricken upon the edge of ruin, hastened towards her. But she ran from him, distraught with horror and anguish, and coming to the brink of Cabed en Arras, she cast herself over and was lost in the wild water. Then Brandir came and looked down and turned away in horror, and though he no longer desired life, he could not seek death in that roaring water. And thereafter no man looked again upon Cabed en Arras, nor would any beast or bird come there, nor any tree grow. And it was named Cabed Neiramath, the leap of dreadful doom. But Brandir made his way back to Nengirith to bring tidings to the people, and he met Dorlas in the woods and slew him, the first blood that ever he had spilled, and the last. And he came to Nengirith, and men cried to him, "Have you seen her? For Niniel is gone." And he answered, "Niniel is gone forever. The dragon is dead, and Turambar is dead. And those tidings are good." The people murmured at these words, saying that he was crazed, but Brandir said, "Hear me to the end. Niniel the beloved is also dead. She cast herself into Taglin, desiring life no more, for she learned that she was none other than Nienor, daughter of Húrin of Dor Lomin, ere her forgetfulness came upon her, and that Turambar was her brother, Turin, son of Húrin." But even as he ceased, and the people wept, Turin himself came before them. For when the dragon died, his swoon left him, and he fell into a deep sleep of weariness. But the cold of the night troubled him, and the hilts of Gurthang drove into his side, and he awoke. Then he saw that one had tended his hand, and he wondered much that he was left nonetheless to lie upon the cold ground. And he called, and hearing no answer, he went in search of aid, for he was weary and sick. But when the people saw him, they drew back in fear, thinking that it was his unquiet spirit, and he said, "Nay, be glad, for the dragon is dead, and I live. But wherefore have you scorned my counsel and come into peril? And where is Niniel? For her I would see, and surely you did not bring her from her home. Then Brandir told him that it was so, and Niniel was dead. But the wife of Dorlas cried out, Nay, Lord, he is crazed, for he came here saying that you were dead, and he called it good tidings, but you live. Then Turambar was wrathful, and believed that all Brandir said or did was done in malice towards himself and Niniel, begrudging their love. And he spoke evilly to Brandir, calling him Clubfoot. Then Brandir reported all that he had heard, and named Niniel Nianor, daughter of Húrin. And he cried out upon Turambar with the last words of Glaurung, that he was a curse unto his kin, and to all that harboured him. Then Turambar fell into a fury, for in those words he heard the feet of his doom overtaking him, and he charged Brandir with leading Niniel to her death, and publishing with delight the lies of Glaurung, if indeed he devised them not himself. Then he cursed Brandir and slew him, and he fled from the people into the woods. But after a while his madness left him, and he came to Howth and Eleth, and there he sat and pondered all his deeds. And he cried upon Finduilas to bring him counsel, for he knew not whether he would do now more ill to go to Doriath to seek his kin, or to forsake them forever and seek death in battle. And even as he sat there, Mablung with a company of grey elves came over the crossings of Teiglin, and he knew Turin, and hailed him, and was glad indeed to find him yet living, for he had learned of the coming forth of Glaurung, and that his path led to Brethil. And also he had heard report that the black sword of Nargothrond now dwelt there. Therefore he came to give warning to Turin, and help if need be. But Turin said, You come too late. The dragon is dead. Then they marvelled and gave him great praise, but he cared nothing for it and said, This only I ask. Give me news of my kin, for in Dorlomin I learned that they had gone to the hidden kingdom. Then Mablung was dismayed, but needs must tell to Turin how Morwen was lost, and Nianor cast into a spell of dumb forgetfulness, and how she escaped them upon the borders of Doriath, and fled northwards. Then at last Turin knew that doom had overtaken him, and that he had slain Brandir unjustly, so that the words of Glaurung were fulfilled in him, and he laughed as one fay, crying, This is a bitter jest indeed. But he bade Mablung go and return to Doriath with curses upon it. And a curse, too, upon your errand, he cried. This only was wanting. Now comes the night. Then he fled from them like the wind, and they were amazed, wondering what madness had seized him. And they followed after him. But Turin far outran them. And he came to Cabed in Arras, and heard the roaring of the water, and saw that all the leaves fell sere from the trees, as though winter had come. There he drew forth his sword, that now alone remained to him of all his possessions, and he said, Hail, Gurthang! No lord or loyalty dost thou know save the hand that wieldeth thee. From no blood wilt thou shrink. Wilt thou therefore take Turin Turambar? Wilt thou slay me swiftly? And from the blade rang a cold voice in answer, Yea, I will drink thy blood gladly, that so I may forget the blood of Beleg, my master, and the blood of Brandir, slain unjustly. I will slay thee swiftly. Then Turin set the hilts upon the ground and cast himself upon the point of Gurthang, and the black blade took his life. But Mablung and the elves came and looked on the shape of Glaurung lying dead, and upon the body of Turin.
and they grieved. And when men of Brethil came thither, and they learned the reasons of Turin's madness and death, they were aghast, and Mablung said bitterly, I also have been meshed in the doom of the children of Húrin, and thus, with my tidings, have slain one that I loved. Then they lifted up Turin, and found that Gurthang had broken asunder. But elves and men gathered there great store of wood, and they made a mighty burning, and the dragon was consumed to ashes. Turin they laid in a high mound where he had fallen, and the shards of Gurthang were laid beside him. And when all was done, the elves sang a lament for the children of Húrin, and a great grey stone was set upon the mound, and thereon was carved in runes of Doriath, Turin Turamba, Dagnir Glaurunga. And beneath they wrote also, Nianor Niniel. But she was not there, nor was it ever known whither the cold waters of Teiglin had taken her. Of the Ruin of Doriath. So ended the tale of Turin Turamba. But Morgoth did not sleep nor rest from evil, and his dealings with the house of Hador were not yet ended. Against them his malice was unsated, though Húrin was under his eye, and Morwen wandered distraught in the wild. Unhappy was the lot of Húrin. For all that Morgoth knew of the working of his malice, Húrin knew also. But lies were mingled with the truth, and aught that was good was hidden or distorted. In all ways Morgoth sought most to cast an evil light on those things that Thingol and Melian had done, for he hated them and feared them. When, therefore, he judged the time to be ripe, he released Húrin from his bondage, bidding him go whither he would. And he feigned that in this he was moved by pity as for an enemy utterly defeated. But he lied, for his purpose was that Húrin should still further his hatred for elves and men ere he died. Then, little though he trusted the words of Morgoth, knowing indeed that he was without pity, Húrin took his freedom, and went forth in grief, embittered by the words of the Dark Lord. And a year was now gone since the death of Turin, his son. For 28 years he had been captive in Angband, and he was grown grim to look upon. His hair and beard were white and long, but he walked unbowed, bearing a great black staff, and he was girt with a sword. Thus he passed into Hithlum, and tidings came to the chieftains of the Easterlings that there was a great riding of captains and black soldiers of Angband over the sands of Anfauglith. And with them came an old man as one that was held in high honour. Therefore they did not lay hands on Húrin, but let him walk at will in those lands, in which they were wise, for the remnant of his own people shunned him, because of his coming from Angband as one in league and honour with Morgoth. Thus his freedom did but increase the bitterness of Húrin's heart. And he departed from the land of Hithlum, and went up into the mountains. Thence he descried far off amid the clouds the peaks of the Chrysagrim, and he remembered Turgon, and he desired to come again to the hidden realm of Gondolin. He went down therefore from Eredwethrin, and he knew not that the creatures of Morgoth watched all his steps. And crossing over the Brithiach, he passed into Dimbar, and came to the dark feet of the Echoriath. All the land was cold and desolate, and he looked about him with little hope, standing at the foot of a great fall of stones beneath a sheer rock wall, and he knew not that this was all that was now left to see of the old way of escape. The dry river was blocked, and the arched gate was buried. Then Húrin looked up to the grey sky, thinking that he might once more descry the eagles, as he had done long ago in his youth.
but he saw only the shadows blown from the east and clouds swirling about the inaccessible peaks, and he heard only the wind hissing over the stones. But the watch of the great eagles was now redoubled, and they marked Húrin well, far below, forlorn in the fading light. And straightway Thorondor himself, since the tidings seemed great, brought word to Turgon. But Turgon said, "Does Morgoth sleep? You were mistaken." "Not so," said Thorondor. "If the eagles of Manwë were wont to err thus, then long ago, lord, your hiding would have been in vain." "Then your words bode ill," said Turgon, "for they can bear but one meaning. Even Húrin Thalion has surrendered to the will of Morgoth. My heart is shut." But when Thorondor was gone, Turgon sat long in thought, and he was troubled, remembering the deeds of Húrin of Dor Lómin, and he opened his heart, and sent to the eagles to seek for Húrin, and to bring him, if they might, to Gondolin. But it was too late, and they never saw him again in light or in shadow. For Húrin stood in despair before the silent cliffs of the Echoriath, and the westering sun, piercing the clouds, stained his white hair with red. Then he cried aloud in the wilderness, heedless of any ears, and he cursed the pitiless land. And standing at last upon a high rock, he looked towards Gondolin and called in a great voice, "Turgon! Turgon! Remember the fen of Serech! Oh, Turgon! Will you not hear in your hidden halls?" And there was no sound save the wind and the dry grasses. "Even so they hissed in Serech at the sunset," he said. And as he spoke, the sun went behind the mountains of shadow, and a darkness fell about him, and the wind ceased, and there was silence in the waste. Yet there were ears that heard the words that Húrin spoke. And report of all came soon to the dark throne in the north, and Morgoth smiled, for he knew now clearly in what region Turgon dwelt. Though because of the eagles no spy of his could yet come within sight of the land behind the encircling mountains. This was the first evil that the freedom of Húrin achieved. As darkness fell, Húrin stumbled from the rock and fell into a heavy sleep of grief. But in his sleep he heard the voice of Morwen lamenting, and often she spoke his name, and it seemed to him that her voice came out of Brethil. Therefore, when he awoke with the coming of day, he arose and went back to the Brithiach. And passing along the eaves of Brethil, he came at a time of night to the crossings of Teiglin. The night sentinels saw him, but they were filled with dread, for they thought that they saw a ghost out of some ancient battle mound that walked with darkness about it. And therefore Húrin was not stayed, and he came at last to the place of the burning of Glaurung, and saw the tall stone standing near the brink of Cabed Neramath. But Húrin did not look at the stone, for he knew what was written there, and his eyes had seen that he was not alone. Sitting in the shadow of the stone there was a woman, bent over her knees, and as Húrin stood there silent, she cast back her tattered hood and lifted her face. Grey she was, and old. But suddenly her eyes looked into his, and he knew her, for though they were wild and full of fear, that light still gleamed in them, that long ago had earned for her the name Elethwyn, proudest and most beautiful of mortal women in the days of old.
"You come at last," she said. "I have waited too long."
"It was a dark road. I have come as I could," he answered.
"But you are too late," said Morwen. "They are lost."
"I know it," he said. "But you are not." But Morwen said,
"Almost. I am spent. I shall go with the sun. Now little time is left. If you know, tell me. How did she find him?
But Húrin did not answer, and they sat beside the stone and did not speak again. And when the sun went down, Morwen sighed and clasped his hand and was still. And Húrin knew that she had died. He looked down at her in the twilight, and it seemed to him that the lines of grief and cruel hardship were smoothed away. "She was not conquered," he said. And he closed her eyes and sat unmoving beside her as the night drew down. The waters of Cabed Neramath roared on, but he heard no sound, and he saw nothing and felt nothing, for his heart was stone within him. But there came a chill wind that drove sharp rain into his face, and he was roused, and anger rose in him like smoke, mastering reason, so that all his desire was to seek vengeance for his wrongs and for the wrongs of his kin, accusing in his anguish all those who ever had dealings with them. Then he rose up, and he made a grave for Morwen above Cabed Neramath on the west side of the stone, and upon it he cut these words: "Here lies also Morwen Elethwen." It is told that a seer and harp player of Brethil named Glirhuin made a song, saying that the stone of the hapless should not be defiled by Morgoth, nor ever thrown down, not though the sea should drown all the land, as after indeed befell. And still Tol Morwen stands alone in the water beyond the new coasts that were made in the days of the wrath of the Valar. But Húrin does not lie there, for his doom drove him on, and the shadow still followed him. Now Húrin crossed over Teiglin, and passed southwards down the ancient road that led to Nargothrond, and he saw far off to the eastward the lonely height of Amon-Rúth, and knew what had befallen there. At length he came to the banks of Narog, and ventured the passage of the wild river upon the fallen stones of the bridge, as Mablung of Doriath had ventured it before him, and he stood before the broken doors of Felagund, leaning upon his staff. Here it must be told that after the departure of Glaurung, Mím, the petty dwarf, had found his way to Nargothrond, and crept within the ruined halls, and he took possession of them, and sat there, fingering the gold and the gems, letting them run ever through his hands, for none came nigh to despoil him, from dread of the spirit of Glaurung and his very memory. But now one had come, and stood upon the threshold, and Mím came forth, and demanded to know his purpose. But Húrin said, "Who are you that would hinder me from entering the house of Finrod Felagund?" Then the dwarf answered, "I am Mím, and before the Proud Ones came from over the sea, dwarves delved the halls of Nulu-Kisdin. I have but returned to take what is mine, for I am the last of my people." "Then you shall enjoy your inheritance no longer," said Húrin, "for I am Húrin, son of Galdor, returned from Angband, and my son was Túrin Turambar, whom you have not forgotten, and he it was that slew Glaurung the dragon, who wasted these halls where now you sit, and not unknown is it to me by whom the dragon helm of Dorlomin was betrayed." Then Mím, in great fear, besought Húrin to take what he would, but to spare his life. But Húrin gave no heed to his prayer, and slew him there before the doors of Nargothrond. Then he entered in, and stayed a while in that dreadful place, where the treasures of Valinor lay strewn upon the floors in darkness and decay. But it is told that when Húrin came forth from the wreck of Nargothrond, and stood again beneath the sky, he bore with him out of all that great hoard but one thing only. Now Húrin journeyed eastward, And he came to the meres of twilight above the falls of Sirion. And there he was taken by the elves that guarded the western marches of Doriath, and brought before King Thingol in the Thousand Caves. Then Thingol was filled with wonder and grief when he looked on him, and knew that grim and aged man for Húrin Thalion, the captive of Morgoth. But he greeted him fairly and showed him honour. Húrin made no answer to the king, but drew forth from beneath his cloak that one thing which he had taken with him out of Nargothrond. That was no less a treasure than the Nauglamir, the necklace of the dwarves that was made for Finrod Felagund long years before by the craftsmen of Nogrod and Belagost, most famed of all their works in the elder days, and prized by Finrod while he lived, above all the treasures of Nargothrond. And Húrin cast it at the feet of Thingol with wild and bitter words. "Receive thou thy fee," he cried, "for thy fair keeping of my children and my wife. For this is the Nauglamir, whose name is known to many among elves and men, and I bring it to thee out of the darkness of Nargothrond, where Finrod, thy kinsman, left it behind him when he set forth with Beren, son of Barahir, to fulfill the errand of Thingol of Doriath." Then Thingol looked upon the great treasure and knew it for the Nauglamir, and well did he understand Húrin's intent. But being filled with pity, he restrained his wrath and endured Húrin's scorn. And at the last Melian spoke and said, "Húrin Thalion, Morgoth hath bewitched thee. For he that seeth through Morgoth's eyes, willing or unwilling, seeth all things crooked. Long was Túrin thy son fostered in the halls of Menigroth, and shown love and honour as the son of the king. And it was not by the king's will, nor by mine, that he came never back to Doriath. And afterwards thy wife and thy daughter were harboured here with honour and goodwill. And we sought by all means that we might to dissuade Morwen from the road to Nargothrond. With the voice of Morgoth thou dost now upbraid thy friends." And hearing the words of Melian, Húrin stood moveless, and he gazed long into the eyes of the queen. And there, in Menigroth, defended still by the girdle of Melian from the darkness of the enemy, he read the truth of all that was done, and tasted at last the fullness of woe that was measured for him by Morgoth Bauglir. And he spoke no more of what was past, but stooping, lifted up the Nauglamir from where it lay before Thingol's chair, and he gave it to him, saying, "Receive now, Lord, the necklace of the dwarves, as a gift from one who has nothing, and as a memorial of Húrin of Dor Lómen, for now my fate is fulfilled, and the purpose of Morgoth achieved, but I am his thrall no longer." Then he turned away, and passed out from the Thousand Caves, and all that saw him fell back before his face, and none sought to withstand his going, nor did any know whither he went. But it is said that Húrin would not live thereafter, being bereft of all purpose and desire, and cast himself at last into the western sea, and so ended the mightiest of the warriors of mortal men. But when Húrin was gone from Menigroth, Thingol sat long in silence, gazing upon the great treasure that lay upon his knees. And it came into his mind that it should be remade, and in it should be set the Silmaril. For as the years passed, Thingol's thoughts turned unceasingly to the jewel of Feanor, and became bound to it, and he liked not to let it rest even behind the doors of his innermost treasury, and he was minded now to bear it with him always, waking and sleeping. In those days the dwarves still came on their journeys into Beleriand from their mansions in Ered Lindon, and passing over Gelion at Sarn Athrad, the Ford of Stones, they travelled the ancient road to Doriath. For their skill in the working of metal and stone was very great, and there was much need of their craft in the halls of Menigroth. But they came now no longer in small parties as aforetime, but in great companies well armed for their protection in the perilous lands between Aros and Gelion, and they dwelt in Menigroth at such times in chambers and smithies set apart for them. At that very time, great craftsmen of Nogrod were lately come into Doriath, and the king, therefore, summoning them, declared his desire that if their skill were great enough, they should remake the Nauglamir, and in it set the Silmaril. Then the dwarves looked upon the work of their fathers, and they beheld with wonder the shining jewel of Feanor, and they were filled with a great lust to possess them, and carry them off to their far homes in the mountains. But they dissembled their mind, and consented to the task. Long was their labour, and Thingol went down alone to their deep smithies, and sat ever among them as they worked. In time his desire was achieved, and the greatest of the works of elves and dwarves were brought together and made one, and its beauty was very great, for now the countless jewels of the Nauglamir did reflect and cast abroad in marvellous hues the light of the Silmaril amidmost. Then Thingol, being alone among them, made to take it up and clasp it about his neck. But the dwarves in that moment withheld it from him, and demanded that he yield it up to them, saying, "By what right does the Elven King lay claim to the Nauglamir that was made by our fathers for Finrod Felagund, who is dead? It has come to him but by the hand of Húrin, the man of Dor Lomin, who took it as a thief out of the darkness of Nargothrond." But Thingol perceived their hearts, and saw well that desiring the Silmaril, they sought but a pretext and fair cloak for their true intent. And in his wrath and pride he gave no heed to his peril, but spoke to them in scorn, saying, "How do ye, of uncouth race, dare to demand aught of me, Elu Thingol, Lord of Beleriand, whose life began by the waters of Cui Vienan, years uncounted ere the fathers of the stunted people awoke?" And standing tall and proud among them, he bade them with shameful words be gone, unrequited, out of Doriath. Then the lust of the dwarves was kindled to rage by the words of the king, and they rose up about him, and laid hands on him, and slew him as he stood. So died, in the deep places of Menigroth, Elwë Singollo, king of Doriath, who alone of all the children of Ilúvatar was joined with one of the Ainur, and he who, alone of the forsaken elves, had seen the light of the trees of Valinor, with his last sight, gazed upon the Silmaril. Then the dwarves, taking the Nauglamir, passed out of Menegroth and fled eastwards through Region. The tidings went swiftly through the forest, and few of that company came over Aros, for they were pursued to the death as they sought the eastward road, and the Nauglamir was retaken and brought back in bitter grief to Melian the queen. Yet two there were of the slayers of Thingol who escaped from the pursuit on the eastern marches, and returned at last to their city far off in the Blue Mountains. And there in Nogrod they told somewhat of all that had befallen, saying that the dwarves were slain in Doriath by command of the Elven King, who thus would cheat them of their reward. Then great was the wrath and lamentation of the dwarves of Nogrod for the death of their kin and their great craftsmen, and they tore their beards and wailed. And long they sat, taking thought for vengeance. It is told that they asked aid from Belegost, but it was denied them, and the dwarves of Belegost sought to dissuade them from their purpose, but their counsel was unavailing, and ere long a great host came forth from Nogrod, and crossing over Gelion, marched westward through Beleriand. Upon Doriath a heavy change had fallen. Melian sat long in silence beside Thingol the king, and her thought passed back into the starlit years and to their first meeting among the nightingales of Nan Elmoth in ages past. And she knew that her parting from Thingol was the forerunner of a greater parting, and that the doom of Doriath was drawing nigh. For Melian was of the divine race of the Valar, and she was a Maia of great power and wisdom. But for love of Elwë Singollo, she took upon herself the form of the elder children of Ilúvatar, and in that union she became bound by the chain and trammels of the flesh of Arda. In that form she bore to him Lúthien to Núvial, and in that form she gained a power over the substance of Arda, and by the girdle of Melian was Doriath defended through long ages from the evils without. But now Thingol lay dead, and his spirit had passed to the halls of Mandos, and with his death a change came also upon Melian. Thus it came to pass that her power was withdrawn in that time from the forests of Neldoreth and Regian, and Esgalduin, the enchanted river, spoke with a different voice, and Doriath lay open to its enemies. Thereafter Melian spoke to none save to Mablung only, bidding him take heed to the Silmaril, and to send word speedily to Beren and Lúthien in Osiriand. And she vanished out of Middle-earth, and passed to the land of the Valar, beyond the western sea, to muse upon her sorrows in the gardens of Lórien, whence she came, and this tale speaks of her no more. Thus it was that the host of the Naugrim, crossing over Aros, passed unhindered into the woods of Doriath, and none withstood them, for there were many and fierce, and the captains of the grey elves were cast into doubt and despair, and went hither and thither purposeless. But the dwarves held on their way, and passed over the great bridge, and entered into Menegroth. And there befell a thing most grievous among the sorrowful deeds of the elder days. For there was battle in the Thousand Caves, and many elves and dwarves were slain. And it has not been forgotten. But the dwarves were victorious, and the halls of Thingol were ransacked and plundered. There fell Mablung of the Heavy Hand, before the doors of the treasury, wherein lay the Nauglamir, and the Silmaril was taken. At that time, Beren and Lúthien yet dwelt in Tal Garlan, the Green Isle, in the river Adurant, southernmost of the streams, that falling from Ered Lindon flowed down to join with Gelion. And their son, Dior Eluhil, had to wife Nimloth, kinswoman of Celeborn, prince of Doriath, who was wedded to the lady Galadriel. The sons of Dior and Nimloth were Elured and Elurin, and a daughter also was born to them, and she was named Elwing, which is Star Spray, for she was born on a night of stars, whose light glittered in the spray of the waterfall of Lanthir Lamath beside her father's house. Now word went swiftly among the elves of Osiriand that a great host of dwarves bearing gear of war had come down out of the mountains and passed over Gelion at the Ford of Stones. These tidings came soon to Beren and Lúthien, and in that time also a messenger came to them out of Doriath, telling of what had befallen there. Then Beren arose and left Tol Garlan, and summoning to him Dior his son, they went north to the river Askar, and with them went many of the green elves of Osiriand. Thus it came to pass that when the dwarves of Nogrod, returning from Menegroth with diminished host, came again to San Athrad, they were assailed by unseen enemies, for as they climbed up Gelion's banks burdened with the spoils of Doriath, suddenly all the woods were filled with the sound of elven horns, and shafts sped upon them from every side. There very many of the dwarves were slain in the first onset, but some, escaping from the ambush, held together and fled eastwards towards the mountains. And as they climbed the long slopes beneath Mount Dolmed, there came forth the shepherds of the trees, and they drove the dwarves into the shadowy woods of Ered Lindon, whence, it is said, came never one to climb the high passes that led to their homes. In that battle by San Athrad, Beren fought his last fight, and himself slew the lord of Nogrod, and wrested from him the necklace of the dwarves. But he, dying, laid his curse upon all the treasure. Then Beren gazed in wonder on the selfsame jewel of Feanor that he had cut from Morgoth's iron crown, now shining set amid golden gems by the cunning of the dwarves. And he washed it clean of blood in the waters of the river. And when all was finished, the treasure of Doriath was drowned in the river Askar. And from that time, the river was named anew Rathloriel, the Golden Bed. But Beren took the Nauglamir and returned to Tol Galen. Little did it ease the grief of Luthien to learn that the lord of Nogrod was slain, and many dwarves beside. But it is said and sung that Luthien, wearing that necklace and that immortal jewel, was the vision of greatest beauty and glory that has ever been outside the realm of Valinor. And for a little while, the land of the dead that live became like a vision of the land of the Valar, and no place has been since so fair, so fruitful, or so filled with light. Now Dior, Thingol's heir, bade farewell to Beren and Luthien, and departing from Lanthir Lammath with Nimloth his wife, he came to Menegroth and abode there. And with them went their young sons, Elured and Elurin, and Elwing their daughter. Then the Sindar received them with joy, and they arose from the darkness of their grief for fallen kin and king, and for the departure of Melian. And Dior Eluhil set himself to raise anew the glory of the kingdom of Doriath. There came a night of autumn, and when it grew late, one came and smote upon the doors of Menegroth, demanding admittance to the king. He was a lord of the Green Elves, hastening from Osiriend, and the door-wards brought him to where Dior sat alone in his chamber. And there in silence he gave to the king a coffer, and took his leave. But in that coffer lay the necklace of the dwarves, wherein was set the Silmaril. And Dior, looking upon it, knew it for a sign that Beren Echamion and Luthien Tinuviel had died indeed, and gone where go the race of men to a fate beyond the world. Long did Dior gaze upon the Silmaril, which his father and mother had brought beyond hope out of the terror of Morgoth, and his grief was great that death had come upon them so soon. But the wise have said that the Silmaril hastened their end, for the flame of the beauty of Luthien, as she wore it, was too bright for mortal lands. Then Dior arose, and about his neck he clasped the Nauglamir. And now he appeared as the fairest of all the children of the world, of threefold race, of the Edain, and of the Eldar, and of the Maiar, of the Blessed Realm. But now the rumour ran among the scattered elves of Beleriand that Dior, Thingol's heir, wore the Nauglamir, and they said, "A Silmaril of Feanor burns again in the woods of Doriath." And the oath of the sons of Feanor was waked again from sleep, for while Luthien wore the necklace of the dwarves, no elf would dare to assail her. But now, hearing of the renewal of Doriath and of Dior's pride, the seven gathered again from wandering, and they sent to him to claim their own. But Dior returned no answer to the sons of Feanor, and Celegorm stirred up his brothers to prepare an assault upon Doriath. They came at unawares in the middle of winter, and fought with Dior in the Thousand Caves. And so befell the second slaying of elf by elf. There fell Celegorm by Dior's hand, and there fell Curufin and Dark Caranthir. But Dior was slain also, and Nimloth his wife, and the cruel servants of Celegorm seized his young sons and left them to starve in the forest. Of this Maedhros indeed repented and sought for them long in the woods of Doriath. But his search was unavailing, and of the fate of Elured and Elurin no tale tells. Thus Doriath was destroyed and never rose again. But the sons of Feanor gained not what they sought, for a remnant of the people fled before them, and with them was Elwing, Dior's daughter. And they escaped, and bearing with them the Silmaril, they came in time to the mouths of the river Sirion by the sea.